Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we have the great Matthew Modine, who's been in so many huge movies over the years, and RJ Bell, who's been in no movies, but he does pick winners. So we should listen to that guy. They're in the first half, and first, Castrol. Want a chance to win a trip to Vegas and meet me? Head to your local AutoZone and be entered automatically with your purchase of Castrol. Get 5 quarts of Castrol Edge motor oil and get an STP extended life oil filter for just $33.99. It's 3 days, it's 2 nights, it's Vegas to see me in November, right, Dawson?
No purchase necessary to enter to win. Open to residents of the 50 United States, District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. Must be 18 years or older. Sweepstakes valid September 24th through October 21st. Void prohibited. See your local AutoZone store for more details.
Support for the Adam Carolla podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Imagine how it feels to have an award-winning team by your side through every step of the mortgage process. That's exactly what you get with Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage does more to help you understand the home buying process so you can get exactly what you need. They've helped millions of Americans achieve their dream of home ownership. When you're ready to purchase your home, and the home of your dreams, they can help you as well. J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination 9 years in a row and highest in mortgage servicing 6 years in a row. When you work with them, you get more than just a loan because Rocket Mortgage is more than just a lender. Right, Dawson?
Get started online at rocketmortgage.com/Adam. For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Matthew Modine. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, RJ Bell gives us his week 7 picks, and Dave Damashek is here for good sports. And now, wishing himself a happy National Bosses Day, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The church has got a mandate. Get it on, man. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. We love that about you. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Funny boy.
Matthew Modine's going to be in here in just a moment or two. Full Metal Jacket, of course. Birdie. Remember that one? Vision Quest. Everyone remembers that one. Dark Knight Rises. So many great movies over a career. I don't know if you know this. Originally offered the Tom Cruise role in Top Gun.
Oh, my.
But turned it down. He felt the film's pro-military stance went against his politics.
I thought it was too much volleyball.
Yeah. It's a bygone era. Folks in Hollywood taking a moral stand and turning away money.
Ahead of his time.
Yes. Well, way ahead of his time, because I don't think anyone in Hollywood, the NBA, thinks about anything but money these days.
You guys ever see Shortcuts?
No.
Little movie from
Altman?
Yeah, Robert Altman movie, right around the time of The Player, 1993. And that's an ensemble thing. It's a bunch of short stories. Mm-hmm. Really, really good movie. He's in that too.
Nice.
I'll get to the punchline of this story, but first I thought, I was talking to Dr. Drew a week or so ago, and he's reading a biography on Frederick Douglass. And then I thought to myself, I know something about Frederick Douglass, but I don't know that much about Frederick Douglass. And I thought, I guess I should know more. And Drew, one of his decent qualities is he likes finding these historical figures and doing the long dive, the deep dive into their background.
Nice.
Ooh. And kind of explaining that he was a slave and then he kind of became a statesman, but he was never really a politician, but he became a great orator and very high regard. Lincoln had a great regard for him. Drew was kind of telling me that he wasn't a huge fan of Lincoln, but Lincoln was a huge fan of his, evidently.
Interesting.
I like that power dynamic.
But then I thought about it and I thought, So it had come to my attention, since I'm doing this No Safe Spaces with Prager, that Prager U's last PragerU, these 5-minute short form mm-hmm. things, little vids coming out. I've done a few of them. And there's, yes, everyone, like Jocko Willenek has done one, and everyone does them.
About
but
getting
anyway.
Getting up at 4 a.m.?
Yeah, just, I haven't, I'm sure it's all bust your ass. Yeah.
Adam's doing one about Frederick Douglass.
Right.
He was a slave.
Now that I know.
I don't think Abraham Lincoln.
Not a fan.
Not a big fan.
So I thought, well, okay, I'm not going to commit like Dr. Drew mm-hmm. and read a tome of 500 pages, but I'll give 5 minutes and I'll be an expert on Frederick Douglass. So
Dunning-Kruger in effect.
Yes. I thought, oh, it'll play in an audio form. And everyone listening who doesn't know all the official particulars on Frederick Douglass, you guys can all listen and in 5 minutes become an expert as well. So keep in mind, this came out on Sunday over the weekend.
It's already banned.
And this one has not been banned yet, but it is Frederick Douglass, a self-made man. We'll listen to it.
He was one of the most revered Americans of the 19th century. His story of personal triumph, humble origins to national prominence, is equal to or greater than that of Andrew Jackson, Abraham Lincoln, or Ulysses Grant. He never became a politician, but he spoke to presidents as an equal. His name is Frederick Douglass. Born a slave, Douglass never knew the exact date of his birth, never knew his father, never saw his mother after the age of 7. This wasn't uncommon at the time. Slave owners often made a point of separating families. Breaking family bonds increased dependence on the slave owner. Discipline was maintained through simple fear and destroying self-esteem. A slave could be punished for not working hard enough, but also for working too hard, or even for suggesting labor-saving ideas. Douglass experienced all of this and rebelled against it. As a teenager, he taught himself to read. This created a desire for freedom. When his owner discovered this disturbing development, he sent him to live with a local farmer, Edward Covey, who made extra money breaking the will of unruly slaves. Covey beat Douglass every week for 6 months, often for no reason. And it worked. Soon young Frederick gave up all hope of being free. "The dark night of slavery closed in upon me," he later wrote. That all changed one hot August day in 1835. When Covey struck him, Douglass fought back. Where he found the courage, he couldn't say. The two men struggled until Covey stumbled away, exhausted. Covey never laid a hand on Douglass again. The teenage slave had stood up for himself. He considered this the most important lesson of his life. Years later, he would tell this story when urging black men to enlist in the Union Army to fight the Confederacy. "You owe it to yourself," he said. "You will stand more erect and be less liable to insult. You will be defending your own liberty, honor, manhood, and self-respect." Douglass made his escape from slavery in 1838, slipping into the North disguised as a U.S. Navy sailor. At any point along the rail journey, his flimsy cover could have been blown. Displaying a confidence he didn't actually feel, he bluffed his way past suspicious conductors and runaway slave hunters. Once in the North, he joined the radical abolitionist movement and was quickly recognized as a powerful speaker and writer. The movement's leader, William Lloyd Garrison, burned the Constitution at his July 4th speeches. In Garrison's view, it legally protected slavery and was therefore irredeemable. But Douglass came to reject that. He believed that the Constitution was fundamentally opposed to slavery. "Interpreted as it ought to be interpreted," Douglass said, "the Constitution is a glorious liberty document." Not surprisingly, Douglass was a strong supporter of the Republican Party, the new anti-slavery party, and of the Union cause in the Civil War. Initially, he had his doubts about Abraham Lincoln. He didn't think Lincoln was truly committed to ending slavery. But he warmed up to the Great Emancipator as the conflict wore on. Lincoln, on the other hand, always admired Douglass. "Here comes my friend Douglass," Lincoln said when he saw him at his second inaugural in 1865. The Union victory ended slavery, but as the Democratic Party reestablished itself in the South in the 1870s and 80s, a new kind of racial oppression arose in the form of Jim Crow laws and, even worse, widespread lynching. This was a bitter pill for Douglass to swallow, but he never gave up the struggle and spent the last 3 decades of his life agitating for civil rights. Freedom, he was fond of saying, depended on three boxes: the ballot box, the jury box, and the cartridge box. For Douglass, it was self-evident that black Americans, as citizens, were entitled to full freedom and full legal protection. At a speech in 1893, when white hecklers began booing him, Douglass set his speech aside and spoke extemporaneously. "There is no Negro problem," he roared. "The problem is whether the American people have honesty enough, loyalty enough, honor enough, patriotism enough to live up to their own Constitution." He also believed that true liberty would only come for black Americans, as it comes for anyone, when they took full responsibility for their own fate. Ultimately, hard work and education would secure blacks the rights they deserved. "There can be no independence without a large share of self-dependence. This virtue cannot be bestowed. It must be developed from within," he declared in his most popular lecture, appropriately titled Self-Made Men. Douglass defended equality and freedom until the day he died. Literally, he passed away in 1895 on his way to a political convention. He had well understood the deep prejudice that existed, but he never accepted it as an inherent part of American culture. "My cause," he wrote, "was and is that of the black man, not because he is black, but because he is a man." I'm Timothy Sandifer, author of Frederick Douglass, Self-Made Man, for Prager University.
All right. Sounds like that Douglass was ripping off a lot of my ideas, is what it sounds like to this honky. Number one. All right. So that dropped over the weekend on Sunday. Mm-hmm. On Saturday, there was a New York Times op-ed piece by Joanna Schroeder. That came out on Saturday. So that came out on Saturday, and then the following day, the Frederick Douglass Prager U thing dropped. The title of that op-ed piece?
"Racists Are Recruiting. Watch Your White Sons."
Oy.
So we're recruiting. Got to keep an eye on white sons. And then when they, at some point, they might bring up PragerU.
Yeah. The subtitle is "Parents Need to Understand How White Supremacists Prey on Teen Boys So They Can Intervene." And then in the article, there's an excerpt. "A favorite activity for many boys is to watch gamers playing video games on YouTube. According to John Duffy, author of Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety, the problems come with advertisements that may appear during the videos. Many of these spots are created and promoted by organizations like PragerU, which Dr. Duffy notes is not an accredited university, but a propaganda machine that introduces viewers to extremist views via video."
Okay. Weird timing that the video of Frederick Douglass came out.
She's probably so
the
pissed.
Same weekend, but it's a propaganda machine and it's introducing young, it's the siren song of the racist indoctrination.
To uplift Frederick Douglass' name.
You know what? It's a super high-end, highfalutin, college degree toting thought to think everyone else is so malleable. Right. Like, oh, it's not for me. I couldn't be swayed this way. But these
dum-dums,
the dummies, the little people, the flyover state people, they're going to see a few online videos and they're going to get sucked. Like, where? I got to buy a horse. Where's my pillowcase and scissors? Like,
Mom, can I cut the sheet?
It's such an elite thought. Like, I'm going to need to protect you. First off, saying to parents, hey, man, bad news, but your 13-year-old could join the Klan, is really calling you a bad parent or a dumbo. You know
Checked
what I mean?
Out.
Like, what if somebody really had that notion? Like, someone came to me and went, look, Adam, you can't prevent your son from joining the Klan. Like, I'd like to think the parenting and the ideas exchanged under the roof we fucking live in perhaps are going to shape my child.
Do the trick.
Have a little sway.
Yeah, but thanks for the heads up, Joanna. We appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, hero. What year is it again? Jesus Christ.
1619.
The op-ed stuff, like whether it's the New York Times or the Los Angeles Times about, oh, well, guns in schools. Does anyone read those?
Are there actual white supremacy groups like doing this? Because I was ready for like, oh, wow, that's a really interesting angle. But then just like to make the leap to PragerU feels a little,
well,
quite a leap.
Here's the thing. PragerU has 400 videos. Mm-hmm. If you are going to accuse them of indoctrinating people into this type of thinking, You must then give examples of the videos that prove your point. There's hundreds of videos. You have to cite some videos and go, don't believe me. Take a look at this video, except for they don't cite anything. They just go, here's who the guy is. It's a weird. It's also Joanna Schroeder. What a 47. Like, you write. You're not stupid. Like, what's going on? Mm. And do you know what you're doing?
Yeah.
Like, is this volitional? How does it work?
Or is it just lazy? Because it's what people expect, and it's what they'll it incites some sort of feeling.
There's a new we're in an era which is weird. So I know Prager very well, and I know Prager you very well. I think what happens is people like Joanna Schroeder just take other slights and use those, not investigate themselves.
Secondhand.
Like, I'm going to go online and look at a few of these videos. Mm-hmm. It's funny that Frederick Douglass came out the next, within 24 hours, a weird piece of timing there.
I almost feel sorry for her.
You kind of should, because it did kind of fly in the face of her op-ed. But anyway, folks are recruiting, except for nobody knows who these people are, where they're coming from.
Are they Chris, how does she make the leap to PragerU? Are there recruiting on PragerU videos?
No, she's saying that through memes and online videos and spots that's how they're recruiting, is through the internet.
But why PragerU again?
Yeah, how does she make, but then
they're not an accredited because university.
Because of the advertisements that may appear during some of the videos while they're watching guys play video games. And
for Prager
U spots, and you might hear about the border, Crooked Hillary, or
but why Prager U?
Yeah, that's the leap I'm not getting.
Yeah, they just said that these spots are created and promoted by organizations like Prager U,
and then give what they called Prager U again.
That's a stretch.
And a propaganda machine that introduces viewers to extremist views via video.
Extremist views. Yeah. All right.
You hurt your own cause when you say things like that.
Well, when Joanna pens her next op-ed, shall we be all ears, some ears, one ear? What shall we be thinking when she launches off on her next opinion? Should we listen?
Celebrate.
I'm not, but go ahead and find actual evil and then point it out.
By all means.
And give examples and times and cite things, and then we shall listen.
Well, that remains the line from No Safe Spaces that is constantly rattling around in my head when Ben Shapiro was speaking and said, you know, we live in this nation that is, you know, far more, you know, safer and better and blah, blah, blah than any place in history. You are not a victim. If you are, tell me why, and I will stand with you.
Yeah.
But if you're not, you're not.
Well, again, it's something that has gathered a lot of momentum recently, and I just it's not good to think of yourself a victim, even if you are a victim. It's still bad to think of yourself as a victim.
According to Frederick Douglass.
According to Frederick. Yeah, but he was ripping off a lot of my shit. Let's be honest. All right. Let's see. I just thought that was the weirdest piece of timing ever. An op-ed and then Frederick Douglass.
It's
the next offering. All right. RJ's going to...
He's on line six.
Oh, okay. Just calling in at... We ready for RJ? Matthew Modine is out there. RJ?
Yes.
How are you, RJ?
Excellent, excellent.
I put a pox on my son because I was walking out on Sunday morning, and I walked into his room because they, I don't want him to join the Klan. So I have conversations with him about
helpful,
life.
Yeah.
You know, he knows I'm there.
So you figure you talking to him will discourage that?
I'll slow his roll a little bit. Right. Hopefully I can get him over toward neo-Nazi and a little less Klan. You know what I mean? Like, my thing is like, look, the Klan sounds awesome, but you got to mount up.
They want dues.
There's dues.
You got to buy your own sheets.
There's weird. There's a whole language, like a pig Latin kind of thing you got to learn. Where's the neo-Nazis? We organize, man.
Shave your head. Buy a pair of boots.
Yeah. Lava stompers.
So
we.
So I also said to him, you know, I made a pretty big chunk of cash on that UFC fight the other weekend. I'm thinking of letting it ride on the Niners. And I was hearing RJ's voice in my head, which is, I kept saying, if the Rams win, they'll be lucky to win by a field goal, but they're given 3.5.
Niners plus 3.5.
The half. It's that half, man. And then I say, what do you think, boy? And he goes, you don't bet against your own team.
Oh, my God.
And I was like,
hey, man.
I was demoralized and I left.
There are certain lessons a dad has to teach his son. One of them is betting ain't cheering. You can cheer all you want, but the money talks.
When I'm done with my presentation about David Duke, I'm going to bring Brian in here and he's going to talk about
the 2019 USC season.
It's entitled Getting High on Your Own Supply. So,
well, listen, one of my, or probably main guy, Steve Fezzik in the NFL, he's the only guy that's won 2 Super Contests. He has a son, only one son, and this was about 2 years ago, so he would have been about 6. And we went to dinner, like once a year we go to dinner and sit, and I hear how he's doing and everything. And he's a smart kid. I mean, Fezzik graduated from Northwestern, you know, so it's, his boy's really smart. We were playing rock, scissors, paper, and we were betting $1 a time. And if there was a certain kind of if-then. If I said this, he would do that. And it's like was a level 3 kind of thing. So this kid was smart enough to get to the second level. I beat him, like, beat his brains in on the level 3 stuff.
Yeah.
Beat him for like $12. He was like, had a little tear in his eye. And his dad looked so happy. He goes, that's the lesson he needs to learn. I'm going to teach him what you were doing. So, you know, in a way, Adam, that's how you're thinking. Your boy, it was a good heart thing he said. But deep down, you know, the world's going to beat that out of them.
Well, for me, it was lose and lose, because then I went over to the warehouse, I sat with the dudes, I cracked a beer, and I just watched my Rams be hapless the whole, just get pummeled. So now they're losing, and I did not place a wager on the game. So 49ers look like they're for real, or the Rams have basically just lost 3 games in a row, and maybe it's time for everyone to come back to earth. And in a weird way, the Rams started this, not with this season, but with the Super Bowl. They scored 3 points in a goddamn Super Bowl. So it wasn't like, oh, this season. It's like, yeah, the end of last season and now this season as well. Let's play.
Well,
real
quick, if you went on the Rams, a couple interesting insights. One is what Belichick did in that Super Bowl, and not that I'm a super expert with the X's and O's, but it was more 6 guys on the line of scrimmage, not allowing that zone run scheme of the Rams to do well. That's this approach that everyone's using now. So it's almost like a boxer, and you know this much better than me, where if you do, you know, push him here and go left, he has trouble with the uppercut kind of thing, right? And they expose that. I think the Rams were exposed, and it doesn't seem like McVay has a counter yet. So
let's talk about a guy who's crushing it out there, Russell Wilson. He's playing lights out ball. Is there a way to take a guy like, so is the remedy to all strategies Russell Wilson, meaning the Rams quarterbacks are Goff, he's not that mobile, whatever. So now you know you can kind of scheme around everything, do this, put the guys in the slots or whatever, man up or whatever. Is Russell Wilson sort of the wave of the future, and that there's really no way to scheme what he does, or Mahomes, or guys like that? You know, are we going that direction, because Bill Belichick can't scheme that, or only can to a certain degree? That
well,
makes sense.
We say though, Mahomes and Wilson are very different, and that Mahomes has athleticism, but he's a thrower.
Right.
I mean, if you come into the game, you're not worried about him running.
Right.
And to me, Russell Wilson is maybe the exception that proves the rule. Meaning, other than him, who has been a mobile quarterback that their running was even 10% of what you were scared of?
Right.
I would say the only guy who was on the border is Aaron Rodgers, where he, especially when he was a little younger, he wouldn't run a lot, but he would run, if it's 3rd and 12, they need the first to ice the game, he would run then occasionally, which was just a backbreaker. Who else is a runner amongst the best quarterbacks? I mean, you think this century, right? Peyton Manning, passer. Brady, passer. Big Ben, passer.
Cam
Who's
Newton.
The runner on the list of the best quarterbacks of the last 20 years?
No, I
Cam
know.
Cam Newton, probably.
Yeah, but
best quarterbacks the last 20 years?
He was an MVP. I would put him in the top quarterback, top 20 last 20 years, right?
20. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Oh, did you say 10? Right. I didn't hear him. Sorry,
he's on the border. I was just saying, Cam might not get his job back.
I don't know about the border. He's not even Mexican. Now, listen to me.
I misunderstood.
I'm going to bring that up at the next meeting. Cam Newton in the border. But, all right. So, what I'm kind of asking is I know historically it hasn't been really successful, but if your team was going to play Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl, because I don't know if you guys read the Times today, but they're now just going to be in the Super Bowl every year. Just,
so they've earned
new rule.
We're going to compete to see who gets to play them every year.
Sure.
Would you want that mobile quarterback? Would you want a Russell Wilson type?
You might be surprised. You're saying something really intelligent here.
What?
Without knowing it, I think. Is
if I was a girl, I'd have an eating disorder.
Compliment City.
It doesn't matter how big you are. Cam's an example of that. Cam is big, and year after year he took these hits. Mm-hmm. And now, when's the last time he's been healthy?
Right, he's really healthy. Price. Huh?
So what you got to do is only run at the high leverage moments,
right,
at the time where success means so much, which is usually the end of halves, the end of competitive games, and playoffs. And if you notice, Russell Wilson is more effective in the playoffs because he's willing to run more and take the risk associated with it. But you've got to have a regular season game, too, which is obviously passing.
All right, let's play the intro, and we'll get RJ's parlay. 8-3 this season, by the way.
I'll take
it. It's time for RJ's Parlay, presented by BetDSI with Vegas Insider RJ Bell.
Okay, I'm up.
Yeah.
Please.
All right. You know, I'm thinking. I'm trying to make some final decisions here. This Packers game, 5.5. Doesn't that seem short with the Raiders? I mean, I'm just looking at the line. And I don't even understand how. I'm always scared when a line doesn't make sense to me. What would you guys have guessed the line was on that?
I gave it no thought, but I would assume the Packers are going to win by a touchdown.
Yeah, at home. Yeah, the Raiders are they're better than people thought they were going to be. Certainly at this point.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go with. Let's think about this. I'm going to go with the Ravens +3.5. This is in Seattle, and that's the first pick. And here's the rationale on this one. Seattle, in my opinion, and I'm doubling down on this, is the most overrated team in the NFL. Their performance, Russell Wilson, all of a sudden now you're hearing about, oh, look how good he is, MVP leader. You're asking about him, Adam, which is, you know, you're a cat or a fan, but you're not a daily bet. You're not looking at it 3 hours a day. He's risen up to the point of people saying, man, he's having a good season. That's usually when a team is going to be expensive. And you look at the Ravens, they've kind of been debunked a little bit. Whereas, you know, it was all the Lamar Jackson. So back to this sell high, you know, or sell high, buy low. I think we're high on the Seahawks. We're low on the Ravens right now. I'll take the 3 in the hook, which is very important, on Baltimore.
I also like Lamar Jackson. I believe he's got the old school Frederick Douglass fro, like the 200-year-ago fro. He's like, it doesn't have cornrows, he doesn't have dreads, and he doesn't have a traditional fro.
Yeah, it's going all directions.
Yesteryear.
It's Frederick Douglass had a silver version of that, but it's the same head of hair. So I put my money on that dude.
Traditionalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, was this at the meetings or anything?
Oh, come on.
This wasn't the last meeting, but I will be bringing it into the next meeting. Obviously, we'll have the slide of Lamar and then Frederick, and then I'll cross.
You know what's hilarious is
find
like
a picture
Trump,
of that, Max,
the president, when he says something he doesn't want to be on tape, like he's saying it, he'll do a different voice, like, and people say Donald, you know, like that. So you can never clip it up and make it seem like it's him. You just say things just in the typical Adam voice, no concern if they get clipped up.
And speaking of which, didn't Trump at one point say, and Frederick Douglass, he's here today, and get a little confused as to who that was?
I'm sure he did.
I think so.
I think he used to call, like, the New York tabloids in a fake voice and ask about
it
Donald
wasn't
Trump.
It wasn't that fake either. Like, he was calling as someone else.
Ronald Trump.
Yeah, he had a name like John Christopher or something, yeah.
Yeah. Not enough. That and Liberace having his young Squire get plastic surgery to look like him.
Yeah.
Not enough made of either one of those two incidents.
Agreed.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, number two, I'm stubborn. I can't lie. I've been betting against the Saints. I've been losing against the Saints. I mean, they're 4-0 with Bridgewater. Bears off an embarrassing loss in London against Oakland. They got dominated. They're laying 3 at home against the Saints. I think at some point the Saints are going to take a breath and say, we've done well for ourselves. There is flat spots in the regular season. And Bridgewater, to me, still is not a starter. He's done well, but I just am not convinced. Bears are in a borderline must-win game. Bears -3, second pick. So we're laying the 3, taking the 3.5, Adam. So that voice in your head about 3 is correct.
Thank you, R.J. Bell.
R.J.'s Parlay, presented by BetDSI.
Thanks, R.J. Talk
my
to you
pleasure,
next week,
guys.
My brother. All right, let me hit BetDSI. Let's see, great time of year, football. Make BetDSI.com your betting partner. Use BetDSI's live betting platform. Watch all the events and bet games until the final whistle. New members get a 100% bonus match with the promo code ADAM101. That's double your money. Paying out winners for 20 years, top rated on review sites. Users, friendly interface, and they have a mobile site as well. Fastest payouts in the industry, NFL, NBA, NHL, boxing, politics, reality TV, esports. It's all there at BetDSI. And again, go to BetDSI.com. Use the promo code ADAM101 for a limited time, 100% bonus offer, and it's only a game. It's only a game until you bet it on BetDSI, and then it's so much more. All right, do we have any hair, A and Bs? Matthew Modine is out there. We're going to bring him in one second.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking for a little better.
That looks more like that, like a Japanime character.
Yahoo Serious.
Yeah.
There's
okay.
We're getting there.
It's getting there. There's one god of him sitting on the bench where he took his helmet off last week. Find that one picture where he's on the bench. All right. So thanks, RJ Bell. We'll take a quick break and Matthew Modine in studio next.
Corolla Drinks presents the World Championship of Guacamole this Saturday, featuring Everride, Mangria Slushies, Guacamole Cheese Steaks, Endless Rant Lager and IPA, plus guacamole from the current world champion, made with avocados from Alan Parsons Organic Farm, plus live music from the Smokin' Kills. This event is free, but you must RSVP. The World Championship of Guacamole. A portion of the proceeds benefit Stupid Cancer. Please visit stupidcancer.org. There'll be prizes, raffles, and Loxy. Enter the guac competition for a $35 fee and get a World Championship of Guacamole t-shirt. Winner takes home the World Championship belt and bragging rights for a year. RSVP now at adamcarolla.com. Sound reinforcement thanks to JBL. Visit jbl.com. Production and backline support courtesy of Champion Sight and Sound. Visit champion.biz. The World Championship of Guacamole featuring Everride. The World Championship of Guacamole this Saturday. Get your free tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat. Adam's monthly nut.
You heard Dick. This month's shipment includes an in-shower beer can and wine glass holder from Sip Caddy for all of you practical alcoholics out there.
An official Adam Carolla's The Hammer branded jump rope to stave off the effects of your shower drinking. A copy of Shrinkage, signed by Bald Brian. A bottle of Ogre sauce, perfect for any and all meals fresh off the grill. It's also gluten-free for you pussies out there. Of course, a bottle of Mangria or 33 wine. And lastly, in your shipment, you may find another golden ticket. That's right, two lucky winners and their guests will get a VIP pass to Laughs with Bald Brian. Meet and mingle with the ACS family and the whole lineup of comedians performing that evening. That's Fitz Dog, Dana Gould, Kyle Dunnigan, and more. Sign up at CorollaDrinks.com for only $25 and cross your fingers because you and a guest may be watching Bald Brian from backstage with the rest of the ACS regulars. So prep your mailbox and get ready for Adam's monthly nut. Hurry, we will sell out. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey Ace, Jim from Connecticut here. Just listened to your Neil deGrasse Tyson interview talking about nuclear power again. You could not be more right. I'm a submarine officer in the Navy, and we've been driving nuclear-powered submarines for going on 65 years. So I want to tell you, you should add to your argument as you're promoting this, the U.S. Navy. We've got 50-plus submarines, all of our aircraft carriers powered by nuclear power. No incidents, no accidents for over five decades. Thanks, Ace. See ya.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
We're back with Matthew Modine. Matthew's pretty much been a household name for at least 35 years. I don't know. Good to see you, Matthew.
It's good to see you.
What was your first sort of big movie? What year? Was Full Metal Jacket the first one?
That was probably the first big movie. Vision Quest was before that. Mrs. Sofol with Mel Gibson and Diane Keaton wasn't so successful, but it was fun to work on. Private School with Phoebe Cates.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, now we're talking.
That's right. That's a great...
all the classics.
That's back when boobies were a thing, and movies and boobies, that was enough to get you to go out on a Saturday night. And that movie... There's an actor that was in that movie that was sort of the poor man's John Belushi. What was that guy's name?
Michael Zorak.
Yes, and he would do all those kind of... He was the big guy, he's going to dress like a girl with the hairy legs and stuff. Yeah. And he was kind of a Jim John Belushi type.
Yeah.
But I don't know whatever became of him.
He lives in New York. He contacts me on Twitter every once in a while. Actually, Private School just came out on Blu-ray. Mm. And I think this is a call back from Michael Zorak that he's going to play it for all it's worth.
This movie, Miss Virginia, it's available in select theaters and on digital and on demand tomorrow as you hear this. I have not seen it because the link or whatever they were trying to send me screwed up. So you tell us about the movie.
Well, it's a story about a woman named Miss Virginia, Virginia Walden Ford. It's based on a true story about her life, and she's an inner-city African-American in Washington, D.C., who her son was in trouble. And the schools, like they are in most of the public schools across the country, are kind of overcrowded and underfunded. And so she wanted to create an opportunity for her son to get a better education. And as she started to explore, like private schools, that cost the same amount of money to send your child to a private school as it does to a public school. So they wanted to create this voucher system so you could choose, you could take the money in school tax money that was allotted for public school and use that toward a private school. So she has empowered and changed the lives of thousands of kids in the Washington, D.C. area.
Well, I'm glad this is the subject because it's one I've always talked about, which is I like vouchers. I like school choice. My feeling is like when you kind of go, well, yeah, but some of these charter schools or some of these vouchers or some of these things, and I know there's a difference. Some of them aren't as good or some, like, there's always going to be that. But I'm saying in total, having a kid have a choice and then create competition for the public schools are like, hey, you got to up your game now because people are going to go across the street and go to another school. I like that.
It sounds kind of American, doesn't it?
It sounds American, and the thing that's... Do you have, Max Zapata, do you have that drop of... I think we had Barbara Boxer was interviewing. The thing that's crazy about this subject is Democrats should be all in on this subject because it helps the kids. It helps the weak kids, the inner city kids. You know, my kids, we live in La Cañada. The school district is good, a little too good. Like, I now I have the dumbest kids in the school. But I'd like to even it out a little bit. But we don't, my kids don't need vouchers. But the kids that all the politicians are constantly talking about, the inner city, and these kids, they don't stand a chance, and the test scores, they're not getting good teachers, and they need more funding. They're against vouchers. Why are they against vouchers?
Seems a little hypocritical.
Yeah, because they're mobbed up with the unions and the teachers' unions, and they don't want to piss off the teachers' unions. And the teachers' unions don't want vouchers, which is, I get it, you don't want competition. I'm sure United doesn't like Southwest.
Yeah.
But guess who wins?
Yeah.
We do.
No.
So I get it, you don't want it, but up your game. And who's been up in their game more than Southwest over the last 25 years, or anybody, because you'll die if you don't.
Like, I picked an industry where everything sucks, the airline industry.
Well, the prices like, keep going down,
true,
though.
The prices, and you the get competition there, does help them.
You get there faster. You have her and her daughter, Nicole. Sorry, I blindsided this, but Max, well, just go ahead and ask Dumbo Drew, asking her about me and vouchers or school choices.
And what's wrong with school vouchers, he wants to know. Why not school vouchers? If people want to use the free market.
Oh, the problem, I'll tell you the problem with it. It's taxpayer money, and it's going to schools, away from schools. It's money taking out of schools where 95% of the children in the country go. I have no problem with charters, but I think to take people out to private school, it's taxpayers' funding that's going there, and I think that's wrong.
I would just say to Adam, update your spiel, dude.
I mean,
debate sort of just, that's like a 10, 12-year-old debate, really.
The voucher system?
Yeah. Like,
you know, it's funny.
Let's get a little more progressive.
All right, I'm going to update my spiel with Matthew Modine. I don't have a dog in the fight, but it seems to me that when I see these things and these inner city kids and they're all looking just, the mama's just dying for them to get that voucher and go to that school, what's wrong with that choice? I don't
know why we don't get to choose how our taxes are spent. You know, I think that at the end of the year when we're paying our taxes, we should, as citizens, have the opportunity to say, I'd like this much donated to public schools. I'd like this much donated to public health and the military. It shouldn't be determined for us as citizens how our tax money is spent.
Well, also, like this notion, by the way, Barbara Boxer's daughter went to school in Marin County, so.
Very hard knocks.
Wrong side of the track, wrong side of the bay. It's tough out there, man.
In Sausalito.
Here's the thing. Yes, each child gets, you know, $9,000 or $13,000 or the high end $22,000 or $26,000 per child to go to a school. And yes, the money does go away from the public school because it's getting a voucher and going to a better school. But that's not your money and that's not the school's money. That's the money we as citizens have set aside for that child to be educated. And if we think that $13,000 could get that kid more education down the street, then that's not taking money away from anybody. That's us getting more value for our tax-paying dollar.
Yes.
Yes, Barbara Boxer. Surely she should understand that at her advanced age. But no, it doesn't work for her. All right. Now, obviously, if you minus the teachers' unions and Barbara Boxer getting votes, then she probably would be for it, I would assume. So what do I'm looking down the page here, and I'm seeing that Liam Neeson taught you how to fly fish.
Yeah.
Which is a little different than vouchers.
I don't even know where that fun fact came from.
Is it a fact?
He actually didn't teach me how to fly fish. My grandfather and my uncle did up in Northern California. fly fishing for steelhead trout in the Hayfork River in the shadow of Mount Shasta. That's where I learned to fly fish. But Liam is an avid fly fisher, and we both had places upstate New York. I've sold mine subsequently. I got Lyme disease, almost killed me. I don't know. I don't know where that came from, but I don't mind it. I mean, it's kind of sexy. Liam Neeson, he's a dear friend, and you know, girls seem to get really excited whenever
you
I say
that. Never know what's going on with IMDb. Hey, yeah. Chris, do an entrance where on Adam Carolla on IMDb.
Uh-huh.
Bigger dick than Liam Neeson, actually. Bigger phallus. Just put it in there, and we'll see if it takes. And fly fishes.
Yeah,
let's see if we can weave that into the
psyche. He fly fishes with his penis. It's so long and big.
He uses balls like a reel. Now, a lot of people love fly fishing, and it doesn't seem so. Jimmy Kimmel loves fly fishing, and Huey Lewis loves fly fishing, and so does Tucker Carlson. So, like, it doesn't. It seems to have a lot of range politically. Is it the love of the at home with nature and the sort of relaxation of it, or do we love eating fish? And if so, or you tell me what you love about it.
Most of the people will tell you they catch and release.
So
then I don't understand it. So it's not for the food.
Liam does a full release.
Release
every time. So you don't want to be downstream. You want to be upstream with the full release.
It's dangerous. You go out in the waders and you stand in the middle of a river. If you stumble, you know, they can fill up, and then your legs are suddenly like anchors and you're stuck out in the middle of the river. If you get too close to the shore and there's trees, you're always catching the line in the bushes or the trees when you're casting. I wouldn't do it if I wasn't hungry.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's not meditative.
No.
I feel like most people that do it just want to meditate with the sound of the river and the stuff. And this literally gives them something to do.
They fell in love with The River Runs Through It, directed by Robert Altman. And they're all privately desiring to be Brad Pitt.
Yep. That's right.
That's what's happening.
How long does one... I went with Kimmel several years ago on one of these things. And it was like... I felt the same way that I feel about golfing. It's like too much time. It's just being out on the river for 9 hours was like too much river for me. Like I'd see an hour and 15 minutes.
Bring it all full circle. Didn't in Shortcuts, which you were in, directed by Robert Altman, didn't Huey Lewis, wasn't he in a fly fishing scene or a fishing scene?
The movie opens with the whole group of them out fishing.
That's like the beginning of the end scene is him, is Huey Lewis fishing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I never, like, maybe that's when he started fly fishing.
Bring it all together.
Blame it all on Robert Altman.
He loves the damn fly fishing, and Kimmel does as well. But again, I don't know if they love it or they just like the whole gestalt of I wouldn't argue against.
I don't get the golfing thing. I've tried, and I don't understand. I like miniature golf. You know, that's fun.
The windmill.
I've had this conversation with Dr. Drew 1,000 times where he just goes, who's got the time? Like, it takes up so much time. And I'm like, I think that's kind of the plan. And then every once in a while, a guy golfs with his wife, and I'm like, what? Now you're flying in the face of your own plan. But sorry. And carpentry as well. Is that true?
Well, I know where that one came from. It was People Magazine. They came to my house because they insisted on doing the story at my house, and I said, I don't want to let you in my house, but I was building, I was rebuilding a old farmhouse in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And so they came and, they took pictures of me pounding nails. And I remember they wanted me to pull the nail out, like act like I was pulling the nail out. But the way that the photographer was trying to stage the photograph, so the hammer, I said that any carpenter is going to look at me and say, what an asshole, because the hammer would have hit me in the face, you know, but it was for the frame of the picture. And I said, I can't do that because it just makes me look like an idiot.
Did you and I have dinner many years ago?
I think we did, yes.
And I don't, I cannot recall many of the specifics. I remember probably go back to like, I don't know, 1998, 1997. Mm-hmm. And somehow, maybe an agent or something said, Matthew Modine wants to talk to you. And I said, okay, let's have dinner. I used to do everything on my way into Loveline. So Loveline started at 10. We could sit down at 8, have a good hour and a half, and then I'd just head off to Loveline, which is sort of how I recall it. Yeah. And you must have had an idea for a project, but I don't remember what the project was. And I don't think we ever did it.
Yeah, I know.
No, you did. It was great. You have to remember
was it
that?
Awesome?
But you're mutual friends with Kevin Nealon and David Alan Greer.
Yes.
And that's how I feel the connection came, was David Alan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was something like that. Maybe there was some kind of thing that we're trying to put together, something
fun. You were writing, I guess.
Yeah,
writing.
I wanted to make this film that was a bunch of jokes. And when my dad was a drive-in theater manager, and one of the movies I remember from my early teens was a movie called, it just went out of my head.
Mad, Mad, Mad World.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the best movie ever made. It was a bunch of joke movies. It was a bunch of jokes kind of strung together.
Oh, Kentucky Fried Movie?
Kentucky Fried Movie. Well done. And so there were going to be...
Amazing our dinner didn't go better.
Yeah.
Jokes. I feel like we are simpatico. Yeah. Maybe you've grown.
You know, like I made one of them, which you can see online. If you type in cowboy lesbian joke, it will come up right away. The poor lady who played the lesbian in the film is now a Catholic school teacher, and she begs me to take it off the internet. And I said, I didn't put it on the internet. I don't know how it got there. I couldn't tell you how to even post a video on online, but it's there. It's a funny joke. But so there was going to be the cowboy, fish out of water. These were all going to be in New York.
And all vignettes.
And then strung together like Blazing Saddles at the end when they're all inside of the studio. So you have the cliches of all of these stereotypes of Chinese jokes, of African-American jokes, of Jewish jokes. And all of these different characters finally end up in a bar or in a situation where it was one big joke. And the movie was called The Joke. And oh, there it is. Look, boom, just like that.
Do we have, how long is it?
Minute 40.
Oh, well, let's watch it. Who's in the bar? Is it?
That's me.
That's you in a cowboy outfit?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll play it. Sorry. You can do the visuals if we need it. Sitting at a bar. Cowboy sitting at a bar.
Excuse me.
Good looking lady.
Are you a real cowboy?
Is that Lauren Sanchez?
Well, I spent my whole life on a ranch. Mending fences and herding cows and breaking horses, so, well, yeah, I guess I am a real cowboy.
Good-looking lady.
Excuse me. Now you know what I am. What are you?
Well, I've never mended a fence. I've never broken a horse. And I've never been on a ranch, so I'm not a cowboy. But I am a lesbian. I love kissing women's soft lips and running my hand over the curve of their breasts and their hard nipple. And I love eating pussy. I love the smell of it and the taste of it. It's all I think about all day long. I love it.
He's bartender.
See you, cowboy.
Excuse me. We were just wondering, are you a real cowboy?
Well, Sonny, I thought I was, but I just found out I'm a lesbian. Check, please.
Wow, well, and she now teaches school and probably...
Yeah. Not happy about that.
So she wanted to, I heard she wanted to sue me, and I said, look, there's some movies that I wish that I hadn't done, and I wish I could make them go away, but I can't. You know, I didn't force you to come in. It was like 5 o'clock in the morning shooting in an empty bar in New York City. I didn't force you. I didn't force you to say the lines. You showed up, you put the makeup on, and you did it, and you got to kind of own it.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I know. I talked to Christy Canyon about that stuff, which was like, I probably didn't anticipate the internet and everything being available, such is life.
Yeah.
So we had that meeting. You do some writing and some acting and obviously as well. Where do you hail from? Up north, I guess you're saying? And how did it all kind of begin with you? Is this something you were thinking about in high school and before?
Yeah, I was born here in California, Loma Linda. My dad had a theater there called the Cherry Pass Drive-In. It was surrounded by cherry trees. And then we moved to Imperial Beach. The drive-ins were always out kind of rural areas away from any kind of light that would compete with the projectors. And we were surrounded by tomato fields. And we moved to Utah, where he became a general manager of about a dozen drive-ins and theaters. I met Robert Redford at my dad's theater, The Lyric, on State Street, which is now the Promise Valley Playhouse. It was a legit theater that was turned into a movie theater. It's now back to being a legit theater. And then along the way, I saw this documentary about the making of Oliver. And, you know, when you're little and you watch movies, you kind of think they're documentaries. Like everything is real and the horror is real and the action and people die. This documentary about the making of Oliver made me discover that these were children that were learning to sing and dance. And I said, oh, well, that's what I want to do. And so I started in Orem, Utah, taking tap dancing and joined the Glee Club. And then in junior high school, I was in some plays. And high school, I got cut from the football team in my sophomore year, and I was passing by the drama department, and they were having auditions for Our Town, Thornton Wilder's play, and I got cast. And then, you know, I don't like the expression, the bug bit me, but it did. And then I moved to New York City and when I was 18, and then had the extreme honor of working with a very famous woman named Stella Adler, who was part of the group theater. And I started working, and I never stopped.
Did you start working almost immediately?
No, it was about 2.5 years of trying to keep my feet in New York City. New York City hadn't been Disneyfied yet. You know, it was before Giuliani was mayor, and everything changed. You know, it was still a pretty gritty city in 1978, 79.
Oh yeah,
and but it was manageable. You could be a young actor, an aspiring actor, and move to New York City. You know, Basquiat was painting murals on the streets, and Keith Haring was spray painting Tribeca. Shepard Fairey was putting his stickers up all over the place with the Andre the Giant, the Obey stickers.
Right.
They were just street artists, and that was that moment. And it was kind of like if you go back and watch Martin Scorsese's movie with Linda Fiorentino and Griffin Dunn.
After Hours.
Though there's a Jeff Goldblum version of that movie, and then this one, but that was a funny movie,
very darkly funny.
yeah, there was that
not broad laughs.
Yeah, New York City's gone though.
There's that scene where he's like going through the subway, and he said he's done. He said the world's longest night or day or whatever, and like at some part he has no money, and he's saying to the token taker, like, could you just let me through? Like, you don't know what I've been through. And the person's like, yeah, I can't do that. And he's like, couldn't you just do it? Like, what could possibly happen? Only you and I know. And the person, I think, was like, you don't know. I could get drunk and start talking at a party. And I remember striking me as...
That's very Woody Allen.
It was so funny that he could tattle himself out. Only the two of them knew, but he could ply himself with some booze and start running his trap at a Christmas party and get fired. I don't know. Is that scene available?
I wonder.
It'd be right kind of at the end of the movie.
After Hours.
Was Patricia Arquette?
Yes, she was. Roseanne Arquette.
Linda Fiorentino. From Vision Quest.
I feel like Flea was in that movie.
Flea, really?
I think so. I have to look that up.
That was probably pre Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I think it was pre,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
So
he was an actor before he was a musician.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did not.
So, because I know he shows up acting in movies, but I thought that was all stunt casting because of the musician. But you're right.
I just saw him in something. It's about some skater punk kids in like 1980.
Wasn't that Jonah Hill movie?
Huh?
No,
no, this literally was in 1980.
Oh,
sorry about that.
Not that one.
Gleaming the Cube. Yeah. Anyway, I love that movie.
Thrashing,
and you can go back and see like old New York, like as it was. And I guess it may have been a little dicey, but that meant you could afford rent, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I felt kind of like that cowboy, you know. You know, having grown up in Utah, I still had a little bit of hay in my hair, and the city did feel like midnight cowboy,
right,
to me.
It's kind of nice that it's been captured, because so many movies, Woody Allen and beyond, use it as sort of the backdrop of these movies that were shot in the 70s or even the 60s or early 80s or whatever. So you have all these different stages of New York, and it's all captured, and it's all just there. So you can sort of it's all historically captured, which is kind of nice, right?
Yeah. That New York is gone. I you know, like, was it West Side Story with the kids, the white kids from Hell's Kitchen?
Right.
Hell's Kitchen is now, they changed to Hudson Yards. For a while, they were calling it Clinton, and that didn't last. So then now it's Hudson Yards. And it's colloquially called now Dubai on the Hudson, because there's so many new buildings. And it's crazy the amount of growth. And there's probably 100,000 more people on the west side of Manhattan now.
We have the subway scene, so says Chris from After Hours. See if I can remember it correctly. Running around in the rain. I guess runs into the subway. It's about a guy's just journey of the world's worst night.
Really coming down, huh? Oh, well, you bet. There you go. Fare is $1.50.
What?
Fare went up to $1.50 as of midnight.
You're kidding. I've got 97 cents.
No.
It's raining like mad out there.
No.
Would you just give me a break? I really just want to go home.
I'm sorry. I can't do that. I could lose my job.
Well, who would know exactly?
I could go to a party, get drunk, talk to someone. Who knows?
Just give me a goddamn token.
No, goddammit, I cannot give you a token. Those tokens are $1.50. I can't sell for 97 cents. We lose money that way.
All right, there's a free.
I've had that situation every time where I'm just going, who's going to know that we had this conversation?
I'm very impressed, Adam, that you almost quoted the movie exactly. That was pretty good.
It's 84 years old?
85.
Wow.
Flea was not in that movie. Cheech and Chong were in that movie. Oh. Had brain fart there. He was
easy
in
to get a mix up.
Suburbia was the movie. It was in early 80s. Amy Heckerling.
Great play.
It just struck me funny that the guy could go to a party, get drunk, and start talking. Who knows?
He got an answer.
He gave him an answer. So when did... and then things take off.
Damn it.
And they
Penelope Sears.
When they take off like House of Fire type stuff, right? I mean, like so many movies. I mean, I just remember seeing you in everything.
Yeah, there was a comic in Vanity Fair that's saying, you know, want to go see a movie? What's playing? I don't know. One of those movies is, you know, there's a Matthew Modine plane. The guy's like, when is there not a Matthew Modine movie playing? Who is Matthew Modine? Why is he in all these movies? So I've got that comment. You know, one of those things where you buy it from the artist because it's a moment in your life that you hope will last. And
it must have struck your old neighbors in Utah and wherever, like this guy goes off to New York, like, I'm going to be an actor. And like, oh, good luck, you know, and then all of a sudden, literally in every major movie.
Yeah. Nobody's ever come asking me if they could borrow money. You know, like a lot of people say that people show up out of the, you know, the closet and say, hey, you know, loan me money now.
People in Utah have pride.
Maybe that's what it is.
They have dignity.
Find a neighborhood that could use vouchers.
Yeah.
That's when people start coming out of the...
But it was
would work.
I'm the youngest of seven, and my brothers and sisters were never really impressed. That I was still their little brother, and they. I don't know. Maybe it's the nature of my family, but they're always waiting for me to fail. It's like, it can't last. You know, okay, you got lucky. Okay, you got lucky again. But it's not going to last.
Do they? I have one sister, but her whole thing, like if I were you, she'd be like, weren't you in Full Metal Brackets?
Yeah.
And I'd go, no, that's what holds shelves up. Yeah. Well, it was a metal bracket, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Called or something? The way they keep you humble is they have no real idea of what you've done or know the name of it or
they can't be bothered.
Watch it or anything. Did they do that to you?
A little bit like that, yeah. And I was, because of social media, somebody contacted me. My father's been dead for some time now, but... He told me, because I think I said something about, I miss my father. I wish I could spend some time with him at this stage of my life. Because we all, as we get older, we understand more. And so you start to understand more about your father, of where he was when he was 50 years old and what he was going through. And imagine having seven children. And so you love your parents even more, that you're older and understand
That's
them.
My dad, yeah.
And a guy contacted me on social media, said that, your dad used to come to the movie theater in downtown San Diego to watch your movies. Oh. And he would always come in and talk about you. And so it was something he never told me that was it was something that I found out years after his passing that my dad.
it's a weird time, these guys, they'd come back from World War II, but they wouldn't tell any stories and they'd do this and do that. But my dad never told me. Not till after he died did I find out he had the shrine to me or went to see the movies or blah, blah, blah.
Hell yeah.
Now I think we're entering an era where I'm going to lie to my son and tell him I saw his movie not actually go. It's going to be the opposite of what
Well, you kind of do
did.
That now. You're like, hey, I watched the whole game.
I was up there answering tweets.
Put a little FaceTime.
Yeah, had me earbuds in. Yeah. Now, was your dad of that generation that would like go to World War II and not talk about any of the stories? Or why wouldn't he tell you that he went to San Diego and went to the theater and watched your movies?
Well, I asked him one time why he didn't put my name on the marquee. He was a drive-in theater manager. You could put my name above the title.
Right.
And he said, I don't want people to think I'm bragging, showing off. He did. He was in the Merchant Marine. He had bad eyesight. His brother was a... B-17 pilot, flew 17 missions.
Wow.
And then I later on did that movie Memphis Belle.
Sure, Memphis Belle.
I wore my uncle's dress uniform in the film for the party scene. But I asked my uncle, was there something that I could do while because I'm going to be essentially doing what you did. And he said, no, he says, that's horse shit. He said, there is one thing, that when you put that dress uniform on, don't disrespect it. And that had, that was a kind of deep, powerful thing that he shared with me. And he said that there's one thing that all these movies about the Second World War, about war, they always get wrong. He said, you're 30 years old. I was 20 years old when I was piloting that plane, and my crew was 17, 18 years old. The only person who was age appropriate in Memphis Belle was Sean Astin, who played Rascal, the ball turret gunner.
Mm-hmm.
He was 18 years old. So, I mean, you see the innocence of his face, and you realize how young those kids were. They were fighting the war. Stanley Kubrick wanted to cast everyone 19 years old in Full Metal Jacket. And Anthony Michael Hall was his first choice for my role, Private Joker. And unfortunately, the negotiations didn't go well. He wanted... I don't know, Anthony Michael Hall or his agent, his manager, his father, I think, was managing him, wanted $1 million for him to do the film. And Stanley wasn't about to pay $1 million. So he lost that opportunity. But it would be interesting to see a war film with 18, 19-year-old kids in it. And
your uncle flew 17 missions and it was, in the European theater, obviously. And Memphis Belle, you had to get to 25.
Yeah.
So you had to get to 25 successful there and backs before they give you a break, and nobody was getting there and back.
Right.
Back then.
Which is where the movie Catch 20, or the book Catch 22 is about, because as they started being more and more successful with people doing 25 missions, then rotating out and going home, they realize, oh, we're losing these really experienced captains and crew members, so let's up it. Let's make it 30. Let's make it 35. And I think it got up to 50 missions before they would release people and let them rotate back to home.
You know, those planes, they weren't pressurized. They were freezing cold.
Freezing cold, yeah.
The bullets would just pass through them.
Yep.
I mean, all the enemy flak going off. Yep.
That's what got my uncle. It was flak through the bottom of the plane that came through his right arm. It's a good story. I'll tell you really quickly. My grandfather told him to join the Masons before he went over. He goes, I don't want to join the Masons. He goes, do me a favor. Just go down to the lodge and join. So he did. He had a ring on his right hand ring finger. He goes. He's flying. He's on his 17th mission, flying over just on the border of France and Belgium. He gets shot down. He has his crew bail out because his arm is almost taken off. His co-pilot's bleeding to death. And he lands the plane in a field in France. And a little reconnaissance plane was flying around and saw the B-17, went down and picked up my uncle and the co-pilot and flew them to a Belgian hospital. And they were trying to decide. My uncle said he was bleeding out. And they were trying to decide if they should cut his arm off above the elbow or below the elbow. And the surgeon came in, he saw the ring, and he said in broken English, don't worry, brother, I will save your arm. And he opened his hips up and took pieces of his hip bones and reconstructed his arm. He lost the ability because of the ulna and the radial to be able to turn his arm, but he kept his arm.
Small price to pay, ultimately.
Yeah.
You've probably been asked about this 100 times, but because I'm a huge fan of the movie and Arlie Ermey, who died last year, what was your experience like working with him?
Ermey, he was amazing. The only thing that wasn't in the film that Stanley Kubrick kept trying to figure out how to get into the movie was Lee Ermey's poetry, which is the most filthy, filthy poetry. I hope that someplace it's going to resurface, that the books of his poetry will. I mean, it was about gorillas having sex with women, and I mean, just as colorful as the language that came out of his mouth in the boot camp scenes. But it was poetic. I mean, it rhymed, and it had a nice flow to it, and it, colorful and full of imagery. But it was obscene. It was absolutely obscene.
Was he not in character? But did you guys socialize between takes, or did you kind of try and keep that, you know, realism where he was terrifying?
No, there wasn't any actors that were really like that. Kind of, you know, stay in character all the time. You know, no Sean Penn or kind of characters in the film. There were times when things, you know, he would forget his lines and something would come out. And the most colorful one was, you're the kind of guy that fuck a guy in the ass and not even have the goddamn common courtesy to give him a reach around. Yep. Just kind of came out of his mouth, and we were all standing there at attention while he was yelling, and then we all started laughing when we got a mental picture of what it was that he had just said.
Gunny shall be missed.
Yes.
That guy, I mean, when you kind of talk about those guys, you know, sort of like John Candy. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I miss that guy. I wish he was Phil Hartman. I wish that guy was around to do a few more projects. And Gunny is that dude.
And people say one of a kind. He truly was.
Yeah.
Truly was.
I hosted Saturday Night Live once, and Phil Hartman, that was the skit, was doing a skit about Full Metal Jacket, and Phil Hartman played the Gunny. But he was a Gunny who couldn't come up with good insults. So he would look at you and go, you with those glasses on your face. From now on, your private glasses on your face.
God, that was such a good movie. And God, that was so intense. God, that was so intense. Private Pile and everything else. Your uncle, everyone bails out. The crew bails.
Yeah.
And he is able to sort of crash land the plane.
Yeah.
And his co-pilot dies or stays
in? He that's why he landed the plane, was because he wasn't getting out. I don't know if my uncle could. You know, it's very difficult to get out of the cockpit. It's, you know, it's so small. The planes are so big, and it appears that the cockpit was probably really big, but it was a pain in the ass. And when you got the what they call the Mae West, that life thing on, and you the suits, as you said, because it's freezing cold, they had a, like, it was like wearing an electric blanket. You know, it just was not easy to get out of that plane if the plane was going down. So I guess he just felt it was going to be safer for him to land the plane with one arm. I mean, the chances of his successfully landing the plane, crash landing it in a field in France, was probably like Sully landing the plane in the Hudson River.
Wow. Yeah. What a story, in full circle back then in New York. All right, let me hit Geico. Let's get some insurance for your car. I don't know if they do airplanes, but to have them for your car. Save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, and you don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that extra money and put it in your pocket. That's Geico. Geico.com. Matthew, thank you for coming in again. Miss Virginia is the name of the movie. It's available in select theaters, and it's also on digital and on demand tomorrow, as you hear this. Website, MatthewModine.com, is where you can also go to find out what Matthew's working on. Any parting shots, Matthew?
Actually, yeah, asshole. Matthew, what was that? What an asshole. What an asshole. Where are these voices coming from?
Kind of sounded like you, Matthew.
It sounded like you.
That's from years ago. But
years ago. What an asshole. Oh, Jesus.
Now unearthed.
Were you pushing buttons over there?
Nah.
What an asshole.
I think he's pushing buttons, but I don't know if it's over there.
Yeah. Does anybody have a website anymore? I mean, MatthewModine.com. I haven't even looked at that website in 3 or 4 years. But, you know, because it's all social media now. Everybody does Instagram and Twitter. So, at Matthew Modine, if you want to say hi and ask me any more questions that we didn't cover here today on the Adam Carolla Show. What an asshole.
Thank you. Easy, Matthew. The mics are still hot. Take a quick break. Be back with the news right after this.
One night only. Laughs with Bald Brian. A night of stand-up comedy benefiting Stupid Cancer, a charity dedicated to helping young adults with cancer. Featuring Larry Miller, Dana Gould, Greg Fitzsimmons, Joel McHale, Brad Williams, Kyle Dunnigan, Jeff Cesario, Dr. Drew, and Adam Carolla. With your host, Brian Bishop.
Hey, this is Brian. I'm so excited and proud to be hosting this incredible fundraiser benefiting Stupid Cancer. They've been there for young adults like me who were diagnosed with cancer, and I'm thrilled to be able to pay it forward. If you love comedy, and if you're listening to this podcast, I'm guessing you do, then please don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to laugh and give back to this great organization.
Saturday, November 2nd at the Avalon Theater in Hollywood. For tickets or to donate to the event, go to laughswithbaldbrian.com. That's laughswithbaldbrian.com.